Hey, this is Cleveland Brown, and you're listening to the About Last Night podcast. I guess your TV must be broken. Haha, just kidding. Actually, I'm not kidding. You're bored.
Hey, everybody, Adam Ray for the About Last Night podcast. How are you? Happy Thursday. Hope you had a great week. I had a great Monday through Wednesday in Las Vegas. Thanks to all the ALN fans that came out to see me at the Laugh Factory at the Tropicana. Amazing shows, a lot of fun. Got some amazing new crowd work clips I'm going to be posting on my website, adamraycomedy.com. So be on the lookout for those. And go see Brad. He's there tonight through Sunday. Laugh Factory Tropicana, Brad Williams. Two shows a night, 8:30 and 10:30. Get your tickets at laughfactory.com. Today's episode, what an episode. What a dude. You might remember him from the Brent Morin episode when we recapped our trip to New York. He was the other funny fella on that episode. His name is David Sullivan, and he's back for his own episode. You might know David as Dennis on the hit Netflix show Flaked, starring Will Arnett, which just had its season two. Dude, look at his IMDb page. Dave's been in everything. He's a working actor. He's an amazing actor. He coaches me on all my auditions, and it's just a great dude and one of the best hangs. You know, you need somebody in your life that is just like a responsible dude. He's a killing the dad game. He's a funny dude, and he is like a yes-ander to life. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what that New York trip was with Brent and I. Dave did that with London, with Brent. Brent was doing shows in London. He went out there for a week to kick it with him. I mean, it's like that zest for life, you just want to be around because it's contagious. So this episode was amazing, from Dave's field goal kicker days in college to being involved in a best film at Sundance, and how his career in LA started. It's a fun episode, man, from top to bottom. Dave is one of those guys we could have back on every week if we wanted. So enjoy the hell out of this, and follow David on Twitter at David Sullivan. Follow me on Twitter at Adam Ray Comedy, at ALN Podcast, at Brad Williams. I'm sorry, at Funny Brad. ALN Podcast on Instagram, Adam Ray Comedy on Instagram, Brad Williams Comic on Instagram. Like I said, Brad's in Vegas this weekend. Sunday night will be at the Comedy Store, the Long Beach Laugh Factory, and the Hollywood Improv. Check, excuse me, my website, adamraycomedy.com, for all my details. Tempe Improv is my next weekend coming up. I'll be there November 8th at Stand Up Live, and then November 10th through the 12th at the Tempe Improv in Arizona. Get your tickets at adamraycomedy.com. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Rate and comment on the iTunes page. 5-star rating. Comment on the iTunes page. Email us at aboutlastnightpod@gmail.com. Your favorite ALN moments, where you get the pod, how you got into it, what your favorite eps are, and we will be reading these moments very shortly, I promise, with the new merch and website. The new website is up, by the way. The new website is up and ready to go, so go get that. But the merch store will be up very shortly, and we'll be sending out a lot of free ALN merch, beanies, sweats, shirts. I can't fucking wait. Now that we got the tour dates, Twitter handles, and merch info out of the way, sit back, relax, and enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with the one and only David Sullivan.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. It's about last night.
Do you get extra fired up for football, being a former kicker?
You know what? I don't, because any time that I watch a sport that I used to play, I'm like, I want to be doing that. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, I get more angry.
So because, there's still like that thing. Is there that voice in your head that goes, I could be pro kicking.
Exactly.
I could be having 60,000 fans boo me right
now.
That's
exactly. Yeah. Well, they wouldn't boo me because I never miss. Bad. But
wow. Were you lights out?
Oh, I mean, in my head, I was. I was good enough to. I was kicking.
Baylor.
Baylor. Yeah. I was kicking field goals in fifth grade.
This is before the raping.
Yeah, before the raping.
Pre-rape. Okay, so
not me.
Pre-rape Baylor.
Yes, pre-rape Baylor. And pre-killing your basketball teammates, Baylor. Do you remember that?
When
Patrick
was that?
Dennehy?
Oh, shit.
Dude, yeah, that was Baylor, too. So basically, like, there was a whole cover-up with the coach, and this was, like, 2 or 3 years after I graduated.
Oh, my God.
And the coach was, like, and they wanted them to paint this guy as, like, a drug dealer, as, like, a bad dude.
Yeah.
When, in actuality, he wasn't a bad guy. But yeah, this guy, like, killed his teammate and then, like, stole a car and drove up to, like, Virginia.
There's something about, like, whether it be your college, whether it be, like, for me, if any news story leads the nightly news with a dwarf was seen, I'm like, fuck.
Yeah, I look bad because of you, asshole.
I'm so mad because of that. And now, like, with all the crap that went down in Baylor, like, yeah, I kicked for Baylor. Like, that's got to piss you off.
It sounded good, like, 3 years ago. Years ago, it was prime. It was like, Art Briles, we're winning.
RG3 had just graduated.
Won the Heisman.
Yep.
We built a new stadium. Like, I would tell everybody, yeah, I was a kicker for Baylor. Yeah, I was a kicker for Baylor.
Wow, what a sweet time to be you.
Dude, it was great. It was awesome. And usually people didn't ask many questions, but when they started asking questions, they realized that I was a backup kicker, and I actually never got in a game. But my saving grace is the guy who transferred in right as I was about to take the starting job is kicked in the Super Bowl. So
who's that?
Matt Bryant.
Wow. Oh, for the Falcons.
Yeah.
So
you know what?
So maybe if they would have let Matt do his fucking job, they would have beat the Patriots.
That's right. They didn't let him do it, though.
No, they were like, we're going to go for touchdowns.
Yep. Yeah,
when we're up 28-3.
Wow,
it's cool to think that
to even the fun we can have with our imaginations.
But you know
what? To even look, man, to even be the backup on any sports team that is like
and
D1, right?
Yeah, D1.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, Baylor's, come on, man.
It's Texas football.
So you're clearly...
That's right. Oh, it's great.
There's always, and especially football, which I feel like is one of the most, if not the most injury-prone sport.
Sure.
Right?
Sure, absolutely.
Maybe...
Absolutely, for sure.
Maybe pickleball, but but maybe. It's a strong maybe.
Right.
I played nutball in high school. We lost a lot of good men.
I don't even know what nutball is. Yeah.
Nutball is the sport, if you think football's tough, nutball's the sport where you sit about maybe 7 feet away from your buddy.
Okay.
And you both sit on the ground, legs spread as wide as you can.
Oh, no.
You have a ball that, we used a rubber band ball that was about the size of a tennis ball, so it had some weight
but
to it.
But solid, yeah.
And you can't overhand, you have to lob.
Okay.
And you have to hit the other guy square in the nuts. On the log.
Oh, gosh.
It can't bounce and hit the nuts.
What?
It's got a square. And then
what camp or dungeon was this in that you got kidnapped and
listen,
taken to?
Listen, man.
All right, take off your shirt. We're playing nutball.
Listen, dwarf basketball camp gets really boring because you're not really good.
Yeah. You got to come up with other activities.
It's like, no one knows how to rebound.
Yeah.
We've never done this before.
Nobody knows how to rebound.
That's a joke, but it's true. Because I've played basketball against, because they're, oh, God, this is going to go into a tangent. But I played basketball in the National Dwarf Olympics. Yes, that's a thing.
Whoa.
Fuck yeah, it is.
By the way, that is the response.
Yeah.
Wow. The way your voice went up, that should be,
First of
you're an Olympian.
Yeah, now everyone's going on YouTube right now going, I have to look this shit up.
Of course.
Jeez, you're the first Olympian I've ever met. Wow.
Yeah, that's actually amazing. A big deal, bro.
It is.
But like,
from nutball to that?
Yeah. but
from nutball to champion?
Uh-huh.
The best part is that when someone would miss, all the dwarves are just below the hoop, just waiting for the ball. Like, no one knows how to jump up and grab it.
Yeah.
Because we've never done that before. No one's had that much confidence when we're playing pickup ball with, like, tall people. We're like, yo, I'm gonna fucking get the boards, man. Right. I'm gonna be the round mound of rebound.
Right,
no one's doing that. So we're all just waiting for the ball.
Right.
But, like, I can't imagine. Now, when you're the kicker, is like,
Does practice matter?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because like, do you just practice the same kick all day?
It's basically just kind of muscle memory.
Yeah,
and it's something that, you know, I started doing at a really young age because my brother was a kicker, and I'm from a really small town.
So you're like the not as successful Grammaticas.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. My brother, my sister played college volleyball. My brother played college football and college tennis.
Wow.
And I was like, geez, I have to do something.
You felt that way?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Why?
Because I just looked up to them. And my dad refereed in like the Dallas Cup, which is like this big soccer tournament. Like my whole family, like my whole upbringing kind of revolved around sports. So I
Your
felt
mom
like,
is Billie Jean King.
Yeah, well, I wasn't going to say that, but yes, she is. I just don't want people to.
No one got the
favoritism.
Billie Jean King reference. Yeah. Don't care. She's
no, she's a famous tennis player.
That's right.
Yeah. And there we go.
Battle of the Sexes.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
She's the. Yeah, that story's about her.
Bobby Riggs.
Yeah.
Bobby Riggs, that's right.
She played Steve Carell for the...
Exactly.
He basically was like... Yeah.
Oh, that movie's coming out now.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
But she's famous because... I mean, she wasn't the first female tennis player. That's not it, right?
No.
But she was the first one to play.
Yeah. Against
a man.
Yeah,
and she was kind of really...
Isn't it crazy that that's a fucking... That was a big deal?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's certain things that we document now with film that I'm like, that was a big deal.
Yeah.
In her prime, number one in the world, female tennis player going against a...
Who was he? He was okay.
He's okay, but I think he was in his like late 50s.
Yeah.
It's like, okay.
Yeah, right.
Oh, look at you just fucking just pulling a rug out from under the film before it even comes out.
Yeah. No, but it's to your point where it's like that was a thing.
Oh, yeah.
That was a huge thing where I was like... Also, so like a 60-year-old dude versus a woman in her prime who's the number one tennis player in the world, like that's supposed to decide who's better, men or women?
No. I mean, she was amazing. I mean, I don't even know what happened. I know she won. I don't want to give anything away.
How many things, by the way, like that are there to dissect? It's like the first sandwich made by a white guy but eaten by a black guy. Like this fall, Harrison Ford and Denzel Washington.
The Philly
cheese story you don't know about.
In Sandwich Brothers.
Yeah, it's like it's got to be the first ever like. Yeah, just...
There's probably so many of those, and rightfully so, right? To be like, yo, this was a big deal at that time.
And dude, it means so much to somebody.
Yes. The first dwarf to bang a tall chick.
That's right.
That's huge...
That's a poor example, because that's a great example. And I want that movie.
Right.
And who would be the tall chick?
Oh, God.
Who would play the dwarf? If you had your choice of casting, let's all go around and say what we would want.
Emily Ratajkowski.
Sure, but do you... Okay, so you want to go indie. You don't want an Academy Award.
No.
Really?
But it's the...
You don't want Oscar buzz?
It's the indie film that, like, gains buzz. Like, yeah, you don't just put it out like, they were gay and it was World War II and they were lovers and one and they're a mixed race couple. It's like, we know that's going to win an Oscar.
We
know it's, and they're Jewish, but Nazis, you know? And, like, that's absolutely...
But they're blind Nazis.
That's going to win an Oscar. In fact, someone's taking notes right now just going like, oh, fuck, I better write
that.
Blind Nazis.
Yeah, that sounds really good.
Charlize. That's his Charlize Theron.
Great call. And guess what? You get Oscar buzz. And get the indie vibe.
Bus. That's right. That's right.
I'm gonna take a straight up, I guess audible approach and say Meryl Streep.
Oh,
because I feel like she can do it. Oh. She wants that role.
She would be tender.
She's done that role. She'd be tender.
Yeah,
she'd be
classy,
but she'd also be like. Down to discuss, like, all right, look, I'm the first one to bang a dwarf. Right. What was that chick like?
Exactly.
Was she slutty?
Yeah.
Or was she sweet but kind of slutty? Was she, like, kind of a nerd and came out of her shell because of the dwarf fuck? Like,
right.
You know?
So
I said I would go Streep.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Done. And that is it's first tall girl and cougar.
And not, cougar. That's, you get the cougar aspect. Also, not unattractive.
No.
Not Charlize. So, I mean, that's
great.
But who is?
Yeah. Nobody. Nobody.
Dave, wait, so did Brad ask this? Were there ladies? I mean, what was the coolest part about being a kicker and being in organized sports? Because like you said, because I played ball with you and you're incredible,
and I
feel the same way about playing hoops. Where it's like sometimes I get so competitive to where I'm like, I don't know if I can play as much as I'm playing because like it does. There's that.
Well, and also once we get older, things start like not moving as fast or as well. It's like, wait, I used to be able to do that.
And you want it more than you did
for
before,
sure.
But your body can't keep
for
up.
For sure. And then there's this guy who's 10 years younger than you, but he's awful.
Yeah.
But for some reason, he's like making a fool of you on the floor. I think just being that, because when I was there, we weren't really even that good. Mm. But the idea of like going from a small school in East Texas to like playing for Division I was like, you're surrounded by like the best the best athletes, not just football players. Like, yeah. They would screw around and we go to the gym and they're like throwing alley-oops and like, it's insane, just the athleticism. God.
And you're just sitting there like, I'm the kicker.
What am I? I just...
Did you ever feel like you weren't being used? Sometimes would you do drills? Because you're fast as fuck, so would they do receiving drills?
Yeah, yeah.
And you were like...
Well, see, that was the thing. When I first walked, it was a walk-on situation. When I walked on, there were six kickers. And I eventually worked my way up to backup. But like you were saying earlier, like you spend, I don't know, maybe the first hour just kind of doing drills and kicking and stuff. And then, because I was a quarterback and a wide receiver and defensive back in high school, I ran scout team offense. Whoa. So I was a wide receiver, and I got lit up. I got a big scar under my chin because I got lit up. I got lit up probably once a practice, so once a day.
Wow.
But one of them, it just split my chin wide open because this line, I mean, I was going over the middle, and I was a little guy. Like, I'm 5'10", but like for Division I college.
So small.
Yeah. Yeah.
So tiny.
Tell Brad about your height.
Yeah, no, 5'10".
Sorry.
Sorry, that's my favorite joke to do.
Yeah. But when you're surrounded by these people, I mean, everybody's 5'6", 8'10" inches taller than
you. Yes.
I would get cracked all the time.
How quickly does that sober you up and make you feel like you just grew up? Like, if you're 15 and you get licked in practice, you're like, hey, no, I'm 22.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it felt like I'm here. Like, I deserve that. Like, I'm helping. And I had, like, the whole Rudy mentality. Like, I'm helping my team. I'm helping my team. I'm making these guys better.
One day I'm going to get in the entire Baylor Stadium is going to be chanting. Right.
Yeah. Sully, Sully, Sully.
Wow. Some guy's going to start to chant on the sidelines. Sully.
Dude, I mean,
that'd be the original Sully before Sully Sullenberger.
That's right. That's right.
Stole your name, that asshole.
That would have been my dream, man. That would have been my dream. We traveled up to Iowa State. And
Hawkeyes.
Yeah, that's right. And our kicker missed 3 field goals in the first half. And they were like, Sully, you need to get loose. We want you in the second half. And I'm like...
How big is that stadium? How many people?
I mean, and it was their homecoming, and and Baylor was like, we were like the one team that they had a chance against, like they could actually beat, and we ended up not getting in field goal range the entire second half.
Wow!
And I went back.
And you're
to
just
like
sitting there
for
getting
my
loose.
Yep. Oh yeah,
because that could have been a moment, right?
Oh, at halftime, bro. Like, I started off like on the 30-yard line, so I was like, I was bombing up 40, 45, 50, 55, 60. Like, adrenaline. Like, I knew that everybody was looking at me, although nobody was looking at me. Like, they were looking at like the band or whatever. Else is going on.
Did you have any sort of celebration? Like, when you would hit a 55-yarder, would you fucking pump or a quick dance?
It was like, no, because it was something that I had done so much in high school that, and I spent so much time by myself just setting up my little ball and my little, like, holder that
the
I would have.
What's the longest field goal you ever kicked?
63. But
63? That's the NFL record.
Yeah, but it wasn't in a game. My longest in the game, it was only in Madden.
That being said,
66 in Madden, but
with a cheat code, but whatever.
But still, it was a good win, but I got it
with
the
wind at Mile High Stadium, but
still
whatever.
Still counts. Does it count? It does.
That's right. It does.
I think Matt Prater's got the record for NFL, and he did it in Denver.
Is it 63? I think there's like 3 or 4 people that have 63, right?
Yeah.
Matt Bryant has a 63, actually, too.
Oh, he does?
Yeah.
Oh,
I think Jack Dempsey? Somebody Dempsey. Patrick Dempsey.
Patrick Dempsey. McDreamy.
That's right. Kicked for the Saints with half a foot.
Oh.
He had the record. Yeah.
I know what you're talking about.
He had the 63-year-old.
He's like Screech showing up to the Max and doing the dance competition with one leg.
Yeah, he had
Screech
half
or Lisa.
A foot and like no arm.
Yeah,
or like half a hand.
Yeah,
and I'm not even lying.
I didn't know that part. I thought he just had half a foot, but he had the NFL record for decades.
Wow.
Yeah.
Until,
and it was 63 yards.
Jason Elam hit one, and then it just it's like Matt Bryant, Jason Elam.
Yep.
I think Sebastian Janikowski got one.
Makes sense.
64 yards.
Oh, is that what it is now?
By Matt Prater.
Prater. So he has the record right now.
Is football the biggest deal in Tyler, Texas, where you grew up, right? Does everybody know each other?
I was in Tyler. Well, Tyler's a little bit bigger. I was born in Tyler, and my dad worked in Tyler, but I grew up in a town called Longview, which is like 40 minutes from Tyler. And it's a small town. I graduated with 75 people, but there's also 3 high schools in the town, so it sounds a lot smaller than it is. There's Longview High School, which is huge. It's like a 5A school, like 1,200 graduates, and there's Spring Hill on the other side of town. There's like, 60, 70. Now we're a little bit bigger. But yeah, you knew everybody in high school. Like I knew everybody, you know, 9 through 12.
Yeah.
Because there was only like, I don't know, maybe 300 in the entire high school.
And Tom Dempsey.
Tom Dempsey. Jack, I mean,
drop the Dempsey. You're on this Dempsey roll.
Dempsey, born with no toes on his right foot and just one finger on his right hand.
Oh, there you go. Only one finger.
There's one finger.
Right. Oh, who did his mom fuck to get that combination? Because, like, did you fuck an Ewok or an octopus?
Right.
And what combo creature gave you that limb situation?
I always feel like there are people who are born with such
deformities.
Yeah, that they
work at Target. Wait, so what's no, dude?
They
I used to have a joke
do
about
such
that.
Amazing things.
They do, man. And you know what? And
some become comics,
but amazing.
Oh
comics.
My God! All right, we get it. You're great.
Yeah,
we get it. I've overcome so much. Yeah, I'm practically a national treasure.
You are. I mean, it's
Dave,
true.
I want to piggyback on that. I think about that constantly when I see an ESPN. In short or 30 for 30 or E60 where they like the Boston like a Boston bomber bombing victim with no legs is now going back to run the marathon and like beating their time with no legs from the previous year when they had legs. I'm like, what? I would quit. I'd probably fucking develop a huge drug problem, a fucking porn addiction that's worse than now, and I would, you know what I'm saying? Like, I just don't know if I have that in me.
That's crazy.
But also, it's easy to sit back and think you don't, and maybe we do. Maybe we all do, you know? But, like, that's, right? It's bonkers to have really that type of...
All of a sudden, you're a better person because of that. I guess because you realize what's really important.
Yep. And what are your choices? To give up and be a legless piece of shit or to fucking...
Or to get the record for the longest field goal in NFL history with half a foot.
That's right.
That is amazing.
That is... But, like, I would love to be there in a bar when Tom Dempsey goes like, no. Like with his one finger and half a foot, he's like, "I'm a professional football player."
And
he's like, "What?
Get out of here!"
We just thought you were saying you were number one all the time. Yeah. Or asking for another Diet Sprite.
Well, I'm the kicker, so I don't really. Wait, you're a kick. You have half a foot. Well, yeah, that's the one I kick with. Right. I don't know if it's like I can swing it faster because there's less of it. I don't know what it is.
Now, does that work for chicks? You think like when he says it at a bar and they don't believe him, but then they see him on TV or he invites him to a game and they see it happen?
Right. I mean, anything. Yeah. I mean, because you're the best. Like if you're the best at anything, it's attractive.
Yeah,
I mean you could be the best. Say something funny, but you could be the best with something.
Cotton candy maker,
and chicks and dudes alike are gonna dig that. Oh, he's the best.
He's the best. You're right.
Yeah, they're gonna dig
Why is that? What, is this, I mean,
because there's nobody else. There's nobody else. There's nobody like.
And that's why we love to make lists. And you know, BuzzFeed loves to be, or
whatever.
Even in stand-up. I mean, I'm sure you see it on Facebook. There, every other week, there's like the top 10 comics to watch on a Tuesday from friends who also have been on the Laugh Factory website. And you're like, all right, does it? This matters, I guess. Now,
And people that, like the best. That's why the new Guinness Book of World Record just came out. And like, I think that I think that book needs to be like totally revised because now they have like, all right, he's got the record for he carried an egg on a spoon while on a pogo stick the longest. You're like, no one gives a shit. No one gives a shit about that.
I remember that was the one book that I always bought at the like little Scholastic. Did you ever have the traveling book fair that would come to your school?
Dude, that was
elementary
one of the greatest.
School, book fair.
I would get a joke book and I would get the
Snaps. Did you ever get those?
Of course.
I got that. I got Garfield's Insults Put Downs and Slams.
Yes.
There was also that one. What was the cat and the kid? The
Cat and the Hat?
Rugger Buns or what was it?
Rugger Buns?
I don't know. That sounds
the cat and the kid.
That sounds
Calvin and Hobbes.
There it is.
Calvin and Hobbes.
How'd you get Rugger Buns? which sounds like a weird disease that your doctor would tell you. I'm sorry, you've got Rugger Buns.
A bad case of the Rugger Buns.
Stop dragging your ass on the carpet. Maybe you won't get Rugger Buns.
Calvin and Hobbes is nowhere close.
I don't know, man. I had some Mountain Dew Kickstart and now coffee. All right, my brain's working on overdrive.
That should be the commercial for Mountain Dew Kickstart.
Look what this shit does.
Yeah, they shouldn't have Puppy Monkey Baby. they should have you doing Rugger Buns. How do you think of that, Mountain Dew Kickstarter?
But those book fairs.
Yeah, those are fun.
And those are real records because we would look at those. We all did the same thing. We turned to see the picture. The fattest human,
yep,
and the tallest human,
tallest guy, person, the longest.
That was always the craziest to me.
Longest nails, biggest ears, like those were fun records. Yeah, then and then of course all the sport records. But now, like, there's a guy. They did a HBO Real Sports profile about him,
he has the record for having the most records.
Oh.
But it's because he does things like
that are ridiculous.
Like, yeah. Like he runs backwards for 22 miles. Yeah. Or like the fastest marathon blindfolded or something like that.
Yeah,
it's
Yeah.
That's not a record.
Right. Yeah.
That's just you making some shit up so you can feel important.
I remember the tall guy was always leaning on somebody like he was about to fall over.
Oh, yeah, because his legs are 8 feet.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
it's like the same guy. And I used to lie to people and tell people that my uncle was the guy who's gotten hit by the most lightning bolts. Because there was a guy with the last name of Sullivan who got struck by lightning like 7 times. I shit you not.
What?
7 times he got struck by lightning.
That's just when you go, crazy. God hates me.
Yeah. And he didn't die. He ended up, I want to say.
Wait a minute. Yeah. There, Greg Giraldo did a bit about this guy when he was alive. Rest in peace, dude. He did I think he ended up, if this is the same guy, or maybe there's another one. There was a guy who was struck by lightning 7 times, he said, and then got married and killed himself. And so Giraldo goes, God himself couldn't take this guy out. Oh, he had to finally just be like, send in the experts.
Oh, gosh. It's got to be the same guy.
Getting struck. So what happened? He
got struck by lightning 7 times. It's got to be him.
And survived.
Yeah, survived. And his last name was Sullivan. So I was like, that's my uncle. My uncle is the Guinness Book of World Records.
Oh, we actually all have superpowers now. Mm-hmm. Like
that's right.
We're all impervious to lightning.
Wait, Dave, when did you start to get the acting bug?
Growing up in Tyler, Texas.
Yeah, I think I just liked being cool. Because if you're an athlete,
obviously you're a kicker.
Yeah, no, I wasn't.
I was a quarterback.
I was 17-0 as a quarterback. So
okay. Where?
Freshman,
in high school?
In high school.
Yeah.
So, oh,
and
that's
then I broke my pinky, and so then I couldn't be quarterback anymore. So I played
on your throwing hand. I hope.
No, it wasn't. It was my other hand. But like they had to wrap it up, so I couldn't really hold the ball. This is my throwing hand, but my left hand was my broken pinky. So I moved to receiver, and I was catching passes like this because they had to club it
with one fist and then one open hand.
Yeah.
That's weird.
But I was like always
Jim Abbott of wide receivers.
That's right. Yeah, good
but
call.
I was always kicking. And so sports was always really important to me. But my girlfriend in high school, we played on Friday nights, and my girl after football season, she was like, you know, if you, she was a principal's daughter, by the way.
What? That's how cool you were, by the way.
Yeah. See, like that's I said, I wanted to be cool.
That's how you get cool.
Your star quarterback fucking the principal's daughter.
She was the cheerleader.
Dave, where is this movie, dude?
This is small town stuff. This happens in small towns all the time.
Man.
When you're,
what was your dynamic with the principal like?
He knew that we were dating, but he didn't know that we were like.
Did you ever like high five him and be like, guess what I just did with this hand?
Yeah. Oh Jesus!
I was cool with him like prior to dating her.
Cool.
And then like once I started dating her, like I was still cool with him, but like he didn't want me to sit next to him anymore after lunch. Like he was like, yeah, why don't you go?
Because you would be at his house for dinner sometimes. Yeah.
So it was. So anyway, she got me to. She said, you know, if you audition for the play, we go and compete on Fridays, so you don't have to go to school on Fridays. We just like go compete, and I'm like. I don't have to go to school at all? And she's like, no, not if we're competing.
What do you mean we compete?
Well, the one-act play. There's a one-act play, and you have competition. So basically, you're on stage for 11 minutes. So basically, you go to a neighboring school, and they have like 5 one-act plays come in, and you all do your, you know, you do 11 minutes on stage, you do your play, and then you get judged, and you get scored, and then you get like awards and stuff. And then it's like any other competition. It's like if you're the best, you get awards, and then you go to the next level. So we were competing like UIL state one-act play. And
this was your intro to acting. You had no prior experience or interest?
No, I
didn't.
Nobody
in the family, nobody you looked up to that you were like, someday after sports, I'm going to be...
No, never.
But I love the fact that it was still a competition.
Oh, yeah.
So it still spoke to you as an athlete.
Oh, yeah, I didn't think about that.
Well, athletes are so like hyper-competitive.
Yeah, that's true.
That like you probably were like, this is the next...
Yeah,
competition.
You know, at the time, I just thought that I was going to get off on Fridays and like finger my girlfriend in the back of the bus.
Sure,
but I guess I just wanted to compete.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I did that, and I was pretty good at it. And I had an offer to go to a small school and like be a part of the drama department. And I was like, I'm not a weirdo. Like, right. Like, oh, drama, your, like, sure. Especially in East Texas, it's like, yeah, you're not that.
Yeah,
go walk.
This isn't
on,
the drama department in like Los Angeles or New York, where it's like,
also because High School
cool
Musical hadn't come out yet. So the idea of doing sports and theater was not even on
the
docket.
Do that. No, not at all.
Wait, now, was there a line or a scene or an applause of some sort that gave you, like, oh shit, I'm actually pretty good at this and I ain't even trying?
Yeah, well, I got the lead role. I got the lead role my junior year, and then I got my junior year was a play or a one act called it was a one act from
The Tall Who Fucked the Dwarf.
You Can't Take It With You.
Okay.
It's, yes, another play.
Yeah. Okay. So we basically turned it into a one act where and I played the grandpa.
Yes.
And the second I came out on stage,
wait,
like
what?
Yeah, I played the grandpa. I had makeup on and everything, and people would just like start clapping as soon as I came on stage, and I was like, oh, I like this.
Yeah.
And then I want
to. I don't have to go over the middle. I don't have to split chin open.
No, not at all. Not at all.
This is way better.
Yeah. And so I loved it. And then after college, I was working for a software company because I was a business major. And then I lost my job, and I was kind of depressed. I was depressed before I knew what depression was, and I was like, what can I do to make me happy? And I just remembered how much fun it was to get on stage and to act. And I got on like a local Yahoo casting thing, and this was like early 2000s. So you mail in a headshot. And so I mailed out headshots to a bunch of agents and casting people. And there was this guy that was making this indie movie, and I mailed in my headshot, and he called me. And he was like, I'd like you to read for this role. And I was like, okay. So I go and I met him at a Starbucks. And we just read through this role. And he was like, all right, what are you doing tomorrow? And I'm like, you know what? I just got laid off. I don't know.
I'd open.
Anything. Yeah. So I met him again. And he's like, I think you're the guy for the role. Do you know anybody that knows how to make a film? I'm like, no, we'll learn. So long story short, I met with him. We decided to do this movie together that he had wrote, that he was directing. And I got a couple buddies to help out. And we made this movie for $7,000. And it won Sundance. So,
dude.
Yeah,
That never happens.
Never.
For people who are listening who have no affiliation of the business other than this podcast, I can't stress that enough.
No.
This was a primer.
Yeah, this was a primer. Yeah. Yeah. It was.
Which people can go see right now.
Yeah,
where?
You can. Netflix.
Yeah.
Netflix, so, iTunes, or wherever.
$7,000.
$7,000. And it's consistently like on the top five list of like best time travel movies ever made.
Yep.
But yeah, we basically, it was just like five of us, and we shot everything on Super 16 with like a camera that we paid nothing for. We faked the insurance papers. In Texas, you just kind of shoot wherever you can shoot. It was non-union.
Yeah.
And if you weren't on camera, like you were holding a boom or like you were pushing the dolly or like you were doing something.
Then I feel like if you're shooting something there, like I feel like if you're shooting it in Los Angeles, like everyone knows, like there's location fees, there's permits, stuff like that. But it's like Texas, like we're shooting a movie.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, can I be in it? Yeah. Just sit over there.
Yeah.
So it's like,
pan the camera to you. Do something interesting.
Yeah, we didn't pay for one location. Every location we went to, they were like, can I be in it? Or can you like put my name in the credits? And we're like, yeah, sure. So we shot a lot of it in a storage unit, which we actually did rent. It was like $30 a month or something. So we used the storage unit, and then we used my buddy's house. We used my brother's office. We used my buddy's garage. We just kind of used locations.
Every location that you knew you could get into.
Yeah, for free.
Yeah.
And if there were places where they were like, yeah, we're going to have to get like insurance papers or whatever, it was just like we just went whenever they were closed. So we shot outside an airport when like the Sonic was closed. We used their outdoor table, but everything we just kind of made work, and we had no clue, obviously, that we were making something special.
Then when it gets into when it even gets into Sundance,
For sure. Well, we shot it. We shot that in the summer of 2002.
Yeah, because
and then it was so hot.
IMDb says primer in 2004.
So it took, after we finished shooting it, it took 2 years to edit because, you know, we didn't know what we were doing, and he was basically just like editing it on his laptop. And so we're editing this movie, this entire feature film on this Adobe Premiere, so we can only do 2 minutes at a time. So we'd edit two minutes, and then we'd edit another 2 minutes, and then we'd try to tie these 2 minutes together. And then we'd edit. So it took years.
And what are you doing while you're
And yeah. in the movie, like how are you paying your rent?
I went back to work. I was working for AT&T Wireless. I was I was a indirect sales manager for the Southwest. So basically, I was just signing people up to sell AT&T mm-hmm. Wireless phones. And
did you have a go-to line that always closed a deal?
I
mean, you're one of the most personable, likable dudes.
AT&T Wireless, because Verizon, go fuck yourself.
Yeah, that's actually, you must have heard my pitch.
Yeah.
I looked at it as I'm giving you a really good opportunity to represent a really good product. And so one of my crazy ideas was you can set up a cell phone kiosk inside a grocery store. And because mm-hmm. basically all you need are some phones and somebody to do paperwork. And so basically Kroger ended up setting up a kiosk in one of their stores. And then they did extremely well. So then they eventually had like 30 Krogers selling all these phones. So I became like
the
number one. Yeah, it was pretty cool.
The number one Kroger salesman for AT&T.
I ended up being the number one guy in the entire Southwest because of that. But it was like I did set up all
like you said, you always get laid if you're the best at something.
That's right. If you're the best.
Yeah,
you're right. That's exactly right.
Yeah. In all seriousness, like what sort of confidence and comes from doing something like that? That even though you're like, this isn't my life's work, but like, again, I applied myself to something.
For sure.
Right? I put all of David into it.
Yeah.
And I crushed it. Right?
Yeah.
Like you. Where do you get that type of work ethic?
I think it obviously comes from the athletic side. You know, if you work hard, you do well. And if you do well, you'll be happy. And so I found that out, obviously being in sports and stuff, I worked hard, I did well. And so in that arena, I was like, yeah, I'm just going to work really hard and make a lot of money and do really well and I'll be happy. And I was. And then I found out that Primer got into Sundance and I actually got fired from that job because I said, hey, I'm just going to take a little time off. I didn't tell them that I was going to Sundance.
Yeah.
I said, I'm just going to take a little time off. And I tried to schedule it to where it was like Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then like Monday, Tuesday. I ended up staying like the entire 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And
that's amazing.
Oh, yeah.
And if you're the hit of Sundance,
oh, man,
you got to soak up every opportunity.
Oh, it was great.
Those parties, I mean.
You know, it was hard for us because we didn't have anybody attached to it. It was just like these five people from Dallas. And we didn't have any publicists. We didn't have anybody famous. We didn't have you know, an agency attached to it. So it was basically just like this small $7,000 movie in this festival with all these stars.
So it's a lot of talk and a lot of buzz.
Yeah.
Nobody was setting up like, hey, will you go to this carpet? Will you go bobsledding with Lawrence Fishburne?
No, not at all. Like I remember we got invited to the Seven Jeans Lounge because I met a girl at a random party and they were like, well, you're in one of the films that's in competition? And I'm like, yeah, does that mean it? Yeah, you should talk. So I went there and I met Eddie George, which was really cool.
Ex-Titans running back.
Yeah. And I met
the Ohio State University.
That's right.
And ex-cover of Madden, Eddie George.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then he invited us to this this party, and I met Paris Hilton, and I met Andre 3000. I was just
losing my mind.
I was losing my mind. This was 2004. So I was
so
just
Paris,
like,
so Simple Life.
Had not come out yet. Her tape had. Wait, I guess Simple Life has. Simple Life had.
Maybe, yeah.
I know her tape had because she was like...
Because then you went home right after that and Googled it.
That's right, exactly. Yeah.
Also, she was handing out copies of her tape.
That's right, she was to everybody.
And saying, look for me on the Simple Life.
Yeah.
Was she cool?
She was really cool. She was really nice. I just talked to her for a couple minutes.
Yeah.
But for me, like everybody I met was just like, oh my God, you're famous.
Wow.
And also,
dude.
Like we didn't get to go to any of the parties because, you know, nobody knew us. But the final night, it was Danny Glover and I think it was Maggie Gyllenhaal. They were announcing the awards and they said Primer, and it was just like,
won the fest.
Yeah, it won two
God.
Awards. It won.
Well, thankfully, Adam does a really good Danny Glover impression, so we can reenact that moment for you right here.
Yeah.
The nominees for can I get a tea? The nominees for Maggie, it's your line.
The nominees. In the category.
Shut up.
Oh, it's yours? Okay.
The nominees
talk to
are
me like that, but okay.
For Best of the Fest. Actually, you know what? Yeah, I'm just going to read the winner. Fuck it. I'm too old for this shit. But I'm not too old to read the winner of Best of the Fest, which is Primer, primer, yeah, primer,
Until Primer. Yeah, yeah.
Dude, and is it like freaked. Right? Is like right back to that moment?
Oh yeah, I thought it was Danny Glover. I closed my eyes and I'm like, oh my gosh, that's actually him. And I
think now it's been said.
I think he did ask for a tea.
It's been said that my Danny Glover is racist. And what I want to say to Brad is, how dare you? I'm trying my best.
Yeah, it's
Wait,
good.
Hearing. What are the odds you're giving yourself?
Oh, I mean, not even. Well, what was funny was they only gave us four tickets to get into the actual award ceremony. Mm-hmm. And Shane, the director, he brought his brother and his parents. So, like, I wasn't supposed to get in. I get to the front door and I'm with my brother and mm-hmm. I'm with two of my best friends. They came out with me. And they were like, yeah, yeah, you can come on in, but they have to go to the overflow and watch. So I wasn't even supposed to get in, but I was like, oh, that's weird that they're letting me in.
Yeah.
And so I went in. But when they said that, because I was like three rows in front of Shane. I was all by myself. I was basically a seat filler.
Yeah.
But like I was three rows in front of Shane, and I just stood up, and he stood up, and we both just looked at each other like, what is happening right now?
Mm-hmm.
And we took the stage. And he starts talking and he looks at me and I'm just like, I have this stupid ass look on my face, and it was on the front page of the USA Today. It was like, unknown filmmaker takes grand prize at Sundance, and I'm on the front.
Oh my god.
Yeah, dude.
What sort of messages and emails and letters did you get?
It was crazy. It was just people.
Your MySpace page was blowing up in
2020. Oh, dude, I want to be in your top eight. I want to be in your top eight. Like, it was,
back off, Tila Tequila.
Yeah, get out of here. But yeah, after that, like, we had a private bus taking us party to party to party to party.
Now it's game on.
Yeah, right. We started meeting all the celebrities, and I was like, yeah, this
is starstruck, or you feel acting like you've been there before?
No, I'm starstruck. I'm starstruck. Yeah. I knew, well, because I also knew that, oh shit, like, I might get laid off, because now there's people taking pictures of me and my boss is going to see that I'm not in Dallas.
Well, where'd you say you were again?
I just said that I was going to take a little bit of time off. I didn't say where I was going. But yeah, once that happened.
Take time off to win Sundance.
Yeah.
Bitch.
Yeah, exactly. It was surreal, because they take you from like booth to booth to booth to booth, and you're doing all these interviews with, you know, AP and like Hollywood Reporter and like Variety Magazine, and it's like, oh my gosh, I've made it. Like, mm-hmm. I'm famous now. And like, it felt so awesome. And then, like, you know, you wake up the next morning and you're hungover and you're like, this is still pretty cool. And then a week goes by and you're like, huh, I guess I better go back to work. And so I
went
back.
Where are the offers?
I had to go back to my AT&T job. Okay. And in the meantime, I was flying back and forth from AT&T out to LA to take meetings. And when I was in LA, that's when my boss called and was like, hey, because it took a couple weeks for him to find out. He's like, where are you right now? Can you go by that store over in Saxe? And I'm like, you know, I'm going to pick up the paperwork on Monday. He's like, no, I need you to go pick that up today. And I'm like, I'm in Los Angeles. Yeah. And he fired me. I was at P.F. Chang's at the Beverly Center. I'd just taken a meeting with Untitled Management, and who I actually ended up signing with. But yeah, I got fired at P.F. Chang's.
Because those P.F. Chang's lettuce wraps.
That's right. They'll get you. That's the first time I had it.
Exactly. Yeah. They'll.
And I was like, I'm moving out here.
Coming from Tyler, you're like, now this is Chinese food.
That's right.
You're like
right.
laughing at
yeah,
you.
Yeah, exactly right. I was like, this is amazing.
That's bonkers.
Yeah, it is.
And then what's your move after that? Sure, you signed with a manager, but then now you're out in Los Angeles.
I didn't actually sign with them then.
Okay.
Because I was like, well, does that mean that I moved to Los Angeles now? Like, mm-hmm. Does that mean that I get work? Because I didn't get paid for Primer. Like, it's somewhere, it's made like $5 million like overseas, and like, you know, Netflix, like Shane has that money somewhere. He may have given me like a grand or something after he got paid, but like, I didn't get paid anything for that. And mm-hmm. I was like, well, I guess I still have a little bit of money left over, but like, I don't have work,
right?
But I'm famous. Yeah. So like, I didn't move.
So
to
you're
LA.
A reality star at
yeah,
that
exactly.
point.
Yeah. I didn't move to LA until like, July. That was like July 01, I guess it was. Not 01.
Yeah.
It was July 05. Cause Sundance was 04. Yeah.
It's almost 05. A year later.
Yeah. And by that time, I for some reason thought, I was like, yeah, I'm famous. Like, that's just give me movies. And
give me movies?
Yeah.
Where's the line I go to when someone hands me a movie?
Yeah, it's like, where is it?
Yeah.
And this is before Entourage. I didn't know how it worked.
Right.
Everyone knows that was Whoopi Goldberg's story. I'm famous. Give me movies.
Give me movies. So yeah, I didn't get movies, and then I started waiting tables, and then I had to learn. I was like, oh well, I have to learn what I'm doing.
Then it became real.
Yeah. Then it became real.
Waiting tables where?
I was waiting tables on the promenade at this place called Bravo Cucina.
So you're surrounded by street performers, and yeah, does any of that stuff ever like how much of a state of mind were you like, again, like, I'm gonna do what it takes, I gotta figure it out?
Yeah,
I don't know if you had any mentors or coaches that were giving you advice.
I didn't.
Nobody, right?
I didn't know anybody.
So would you see street performers on the promenade? Like, I'll remember, I'll say this out loud, I mean, shit, man, I used to take weird jobs before Wolverine Universal. I was like, I would dress up as Superman to go to kids' parties for a couple hours.
Oh wow.
Some of those
yeah.
stories, I can believe I haven't told some of these stories. Yeah. There were some of the most degrading afternoons of my entire life, and a couple of them were great.
Was it an outfit that you actually paid for?
Oh yeah, dude. Went to a Hollywood Toys and Costume, got a Superman outfit. Fucking yeah.
Oh my
and,
gosh.
And one time there was just the dads were so fucked up. And this is before I hadn't even started stand up yet. I'd maybe done 20 shows,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
And it was like 2006.
Yeah.
And these drunk dads at this barbecue were just dogging on me. And I didn't I was trying to be professional.
Gosh.
And B, I was like, I don't
trying to stay
I'm not
character,
quick enough.
Like, I don't know why you're saying that to me, citizen. Yeah.
I'm Superman, yeah, and you're a cunt.
Yeah.
You know, I'm right. up and away. Is that his catchphrase? Fuck it. Can I get that potato salad to go?
Right.
But I just would see those prominent performers every now and then, though, and I would literally be like, I wouldn't go as far as to like get paperwork or whatever, but I would watch sometimes and see the amount of money, and I would also be like, God, is there anything I can do that could supplement this type of income? Or do I have skills that could be worthy of the promenade?
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
how do you do that? You know
yeah.
what I'm saying?
Oh, for sure.
Did
no,
you ever?
Was,
no,
you're, I didn't just because I didn't have a skill. I was like, my skill is like sports, and I can't be a pro athlete anymore.
You can't
and
kick
like,
field goals on
yeah,
the promenade?
Exactly. I'm like, I can't do that.
Gather around, I'll kick it over the McDonald's arch.
And it was a 35-yarder.
Yeah. And because like I didn't come from like a theater or drama background, I didn't have like Shakespeare or anything. I couldn't go do a play.
Right.
So, no.
And no Michael Jackson impersonating.
No, none of that. But it was heartbreaking a couple of times. I mean, that kind of breaks my heart hearing those guys say that to you. But like, because Primer had just won like the Berlin Film Festival, and I was waiting tables at this place, and there was this long table of like 12 European people, and they're like speaking their language, whatever it was, maybe it was German, I don't know, whatever it was. And then the one person
I just got really sweaty when you did
that. The one person who spoke a little bit English says, excuse me, are you a movie star? And I thought it was just like they're visiting, they expect right. everybody to be a movie star. And I was like, no. Would you like the calamari as your meal, or would you like it? And then, real. Yeah. And then she's like, no, we were all talking, and we see you in a movie. And they had seen Primer at the Berlin Film Festival.
My
and I was
God.
Like, so how many iced teas is that?
Okay,
seven iced teas. It was like it felt good for like 3 seconds. I was like, oh wow, I'm like international, but like
I'm here.
Oh, I'm here. And
right.
that's that scene in The Wrestler whenever he's like cutting meat. And the guy comes up and he's like,
you were that wrestler.
Yeah, yeah.
You're Randy the Ram.
Oh yeah, exactly. That's what also broke my heart when you told me the guys were just like ragging on you, because like you're following your dream, and you're doing what you need to be doing in order to follow that dream, and
right.
it's just like, oh gosh, this hurts.
So I mean, it's funny because I've been asked before, like during radio interviews and stuff, someone's just like, well, what's your big break? And I go, well, there isn't a big break. There's a lot of little breaks.
Yeah,
so like, so someone could say that, yeah, Primer was your big break.
Yeah.
But then you could have just been waiting tables forever
and
been the guy that started in that one indie film one time.
Oh, absolutely. And that's what it was looking like, because it was such a specific movie, and it's such like it's a really, really well-known cult film, but like that doesn't really get you anywhere in Hollywood. Like at least it didn't 12 years ago. And I didn't know anybody. So like, and there wasn't people saying, oh, you're the Primer guy. And I can probably count on maybe 10 times I've ever been recognized from that. But when I do get recognized, it's like people who want to talk about it. I'm like, yeah, this feels good. But yeah, so I had to spend like the next 3 or 4 years doing what everybody does out here. I was waiting tables. I tried to get in classes. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, the first week that I moved out here, I met a girl. We dated for 3 months. She moved back to Massachusetts, and then I found out I was having a kid. So that was like, wait, I don't know what I'm doing, where I'm going, what I'm supposed to do with my life. I have a 12-year-old, by the way.
Yeah. Yep. And I want to say this too, like the what you put into your work and your friendships and your relationship, like times 10 with your son.
Oh, thank
like,
you,
yeah,
man.
Dude. It's like, thank you know, you, it's it definitely. I mean, it's inspiring. It's awesome. It's also like cool to know that like there's dads out there just crushing the dad game and doing your shit just as much. It's like none of that is suffering.
Yeah,
at least from what I can tell.
Dude, I'm lucky. His mom has him during the week. I have him on the weekends, and we dated for 3 months, and then we decided. You know, she stayed out in Massachusetts. I went out there for like her last trimester and was doing like the Lamaze classes, and I was scared because I was like, we don't have insurance. We don't have money.
Yeah.
I was waiting tables at night, and I was doing construction during the day. And then we had this kid, and then I had an opportunity to come back to do like a co-star in a TV show, like a co-star audition. So I was like, I got to go back. And so
I
came
tell
back.
Me what a co-star is.
A co-star is basically you come in and you say one line on a TV show.
Like on How I Met Your Mother, I think my first co-star I went in for was one line where he was just like, I got it.
Yeah. My co-star audition was for Joey, the Friends spinoff.
Yeah.
And my line was, what's up?
Topical.
It was the big.
I mean, that was going on?
Uh-huh. It took me there.
That's right.
And how many times did
and
you...
I booked it.
Did you really?
Yeah, I booked it. It was my first audition.
Where's that audition footage?
I booked it. Yeah.
First audition.
Your first film gets... Win Sundance. Your first audition you book it. What you're trying to say, David, is just this acting thing is easy.
It's a piece of cake. Yeah. To be honest with you, I just really never is. I just didn't give myself enough firsts.
Yeah,
that's
wait.
What
so so what? How what kind of a curveball is having a? I mean,
a kid.
Yeah.
It's well.
No, a scene with Matt LeBlanc.
I don't think you're. Yeah, exactly.
Also, yeah.
I don't think you're ever ready. Yeah. I don't think you're ever ready to like. You know what? We're ready. And I've talked with a handful of dads. It's weird. I don't really know that many dads out here, but the few that I do know, it's kind of like a resounding like, yeah, we weren't ready either. But you just do the best you can. And and some people just aren't good parents. They're just like, they do the best they can, but the best that they can means, yeah, I'm just going to sit here and let you do whatever you want. And they turn into shitty kids.
Right.
But I was lucky because my parents were always there. My parents really like encouraged me and supported me and loved me and...
So you saw that as an example.
Did. Yeah, I was like, oh well, if I'm half as good of a dad as my dad was, like this is gonna be fine.
And I feel like it's like apply as much like I know that like I'll love them as much as they and then support and then like the way they did for me and then all the other stuff you're gonna figure out as you go probably right
for sure. That's exactly what it was.
Was like, there ever a time when you have the kid where you go, well, maybe I move to Massachusetts, maybe I get a factory job, maybe I get some sort of thing like that.
When I was in Massachusetts, that's what I thought I was going to do because my son's mother, her name's Lauren, her cousin ran a construction company and he was the one that kind of gave me the job. And initially it was just kind of like cleaning up the sites, but then like he taught me how to like build a shelf and then like he taught me how to hang sheetrock and I'm like, oh, okay. Like I can do this, and I guess like this is what I'm gonna be doing. And then I'd go to bed at night, and I'm just like, no, I can't do this.
This
like,
is not
this
the
is
life.
Not. I'm yeah, not gonna yeah, be yeah. happy. She's not gonna be happy because I'm gonna be just like and shitty.
You're gonna come home miserable. You're gonna be mad. You're gonna be mad at your kid.
Yeah, I'm gonna be blamed.
No fault of their own.
Yeah. And so it took a lot. It took a lot to be like, Lauren, I gotta go back. It would be cool if you thought about coming back. Because I'll be flying back every month if I have to, cause I'm obviously going to be in my son's life. But she didn't want me to go like it. Oh, I can't believe I'm saying this. But like she, so much so that like, she like stood in front of the bus, like the bus to the airport.
Oh,
she
wouldn't let me get on the bus. And,
it was really kind of traumatic because I'm like, am I doing the right thing? And I was 28 at the time, and I was like pursuing this dream.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So it was. There were a lot of questions, and then when I got that co-star, I was like, "This is what I'm supposed to be doing." Like I love, even though it's one line. Like,
yeah, but that was immediate legitimacy.
Yeah, and for sure.
Of like,
yeah. And she ended up coming back like 3 months later, and we lived together for a little bit, and we tried to work it out, but we just couldn't. And then she's since gotten married. He lives in Santa Monica. I live in Sherman Oaks. I have him on the weekend, so it's worked out. But at the beginning, I mean, I guess it's like the beginning of anything. It's just so hard, and you keep thinking, is this going to work? Is this what my life is? Is this going to work out? Is this really what I'm supposed to be doing?
What have you gained from fatherhood that you've been able to? I mean, I hear from every comedian or actor buddy of mine that has one that that tells me too, like, you know, they see me with my nieces and nephew, and they're like,
oh,
you're
so good.
They're like, you can do both, man. They're like, you can't, because, you know, in my eyes, I think I'm just, at least right now, like, thinking that I would get so committed or lost in that that what I'm doing right now would take a back seat.
Yeah.
And I see guys like you and others that just figure it out. And also there are times that it's like the few times that I will kind of take it easy for myself. And, you know, Brad can probably test this too. Once, you know, him and his now wife, mm-hmm. That's right, now wife.
Mm-hmm. My wife.
Like having...
Love doing that.
Never stop doing it.
Yeah, I won't.
and so then, mm-hmm. like, to where you have those downtime moments where it's like, oh, yeah, no, you do need that too. Because, like, mm-hmm. even my downtime will just be, like, what, maybe watching a show. But, like, even then, my wheels are turning because I don't have human interaction, which I feel like is...
For sure.
And it's not like, oh, I'll take a night off and I'll surf the internet. Yeah. No, dude, that's not really taking not a break.
Off. Yeah. It helps to have that person that's...
I'm lonely is what I'm saying. Do you guys want to fuck? Or
I
got gummy bears and Twizzlers. Those aren't for the podcast.
Yeah. It does help having that person to pull you out of the business every now and then. Be like, no, I need you here focused on this, which has nothing to do with the business at all.
Yeah, why are you pointing at you're pointing at her.
I'm pointing at my dick, saying I need you here.
Yeah, right.
Trying to hit on you, David. This is like the old politician tapping his toe under the men's room bathroom.
I'm into it. I like it. Is your wife in the business?
No. Oh, thank goodness. God.
Yeah.
I don't want that. No. I'm so glad I found.
Good for you.
Yeah. She doesn't have a Twitter account. She doesn't have an Instagram.
Amazing.
It's the best.
Isn't that the best? I
How
mean,
did
like,
you find her?
On the threesome dating app. Tell you about it. Yeah. Okay.
That's perfect.
Wait. So what perspective have you gained from it though?
It's weird.
David before and like after?
David before was just like, you know, I'm going to do whatever I want, and I'm going to do it now. And I very much become, I wouldn't say obsessed, but I very much become interested in this moment right here. I'm not thinking about tomorrow. I'm not thinking about what I did yesterday. Like, if I'm talking to somebody, it's like, I'm in this moment right here, and everything else kind of goes away.
Yeah.
So.
I will add to that. You are one of the most present motherfuckers I've ever met. And it's why, and people should know, so David, I don't know when you start working at John Rosenfeld Studios, which is an acting studio.
Yeah.
And I think I might have been in class with you, or you may have been a TA when I first met you.
Mm-hmm.
But I now will privately coach with Dave for 90-some% of my shit because it's like such a rarity to have somebody get to know you like personally and then professionally like that and know your strengths and weaknesses and be able to communicate those to you in a way that you can take them in.
Yeah.
But also like, dude, you are just so always locked in and it's like that immediately to me when I started coaching with you, I was like, oh, cool. Like, I feel like and you know, there are some and other great coaches I worked with, but like, dude, they would be in their phone a little bit before we started or they would be like, so what is it? And it was just like, dude, you just picked it up and it was like go time. Oh, and that is like,
well, dude, the pleasure is mine. Like I love working. I just love working with actors because it does give me that time to just get locked in. And I think that, I don't know. I think if you can do that as an actor, if you can make yourself insanely present and insanely in the given circumstances that this story has created for you, that's kind of all the work is done for you. And then at that point, you just try to have a more specific point of view, like how this guy sees the world, what he would do in this given circumstance. Mm. So, it's great working with you, obviously. Like I don't know if you know how good of an actor he is, Brad, but he's
Handsome.
Great.
Like he's on Netflix.
He's great. He really is. And he's so quick. Like he'll get an audition and he'll be like, hey, I just got this an hour ago. Can we run it? And it's 7 pages. And he's like, hands me the script. I'm like, you don't need the script. And he's like, no, I got it. Like he just picks up the story so fast and it's so impressive.
And you were telling me, I appreciate that. You were telling me, tell it to Hollywood.
Yeah.
And you were telling me that you will, I mean, gain as much like, you learn from,
from
reading with people and doing, right?
Of course, absolutely. That's why I think that that's also something that I think made me such a good actor is when I started teaching, because I found out that I'm teaching what I need to learn. It's like a weird fucked up way of like projecting. It's like you project onto other people what it is that you don't like about yourself. So in teaching, I'm teaching somebody else how to do something that I haven't yet taught myself. So then I just kind of take a step back and I'm like, oh, David, you need that.
I should take that advice.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, yeah, so it's really made me a much better actor once I started teaching and coaching on a regular basis.
Yeah, because like, I mean, and if you look at your IMDb page, it's...
It's fucking long, man.
It's long.
I mean, it's going to take you a couple days to scroll the way.
It's consistent working, and it's some that went on for multiple episodes. Yeah. Some are some one. I mean, yeah. I'm sure you've been in every CSI.
I have been. I've been in all the CSIs.
But what was the audition for Flaked like?
Yeah. That
Flaked on Netflix.
Played Dennis. Yeah,
I played Dennis. It's
a good show.
Will Arnett wrote this show with his buddy Mark Chappell. Basically, he had gotten a good reputation and a good relationship with Netflix, because they decided to do another season of Arrested, and then BoJack Horseman was just this huge hit. So they were like, "Yeah, we'll give you this much money to make 8 episodes." And I was kind of in a lull. Like, I had done a bunch of guest spots and I'd done some indie movies, but I was like, I need something different. And I went and talked to my manager. I was at Principal Otto Young, and I said, something needs to change. Like, we need to add somebody to the team. We need to like change the approach. Like, how are you pitching me? What's my reel look like?
How many years or days into the lull was this before you brought this up?
This was about 2 years.
Okay.
It was like, and I know it looks like on IMDb that I work all the time, but like, I didn't.
Well,
like,
but it, I mean, those, I, yes.
Yeah.
Because you see
but, like,
a lot
it's
of
short
work.
Film that you did with your buddy.
It's a short film. It's a one-day guest star.
Exactly.
It's something that's
exactly.
Not,
And then you go 5 months without working, but still on IMDb, it shows, oh, you worked, 13 times in 2015.
Yeah. Right.
But really, I did 3 of those in the course of 2 weeks, and then, nothing.
I ask about that, the duration of the lull, because, like, dude, everybody goes through them, whether you act or you're just a comic or you're both.
Dude,
like, I mean, I feel like I'm constantly in one because it's like never. I'm constantly not satisfied and always wanting more.
Yeah.
And so how do you get yourself out of that lull is the biggest part, and keep yourself occupied, but also keep yourself sharp, so that when Flake comes along, you're like, all right, I can quickly get out. I'm ready. Yeah.
I think it was the teaching and the coaching, because I wasn't auditioning, and I just had that meeting with my manager. My manager was actually. Producing this new show called Flaked, because my manager or the head of my management company reps Will Arnett, and so they brought me in for this other role. He was an angry coffee shop owner, and at the time I had a beard and I shaved it into a mustache and I curled the mustache and I wore this dumbass hipster hat.
Straight Silver Lake.
Yeah, exactly.
It's Silver Lake.
I think it actually said that in the breakdown, like Silver Lake-esque.
Right,
I was like, this is a completely wrong role, but this is the first like real audition I've had in forever. And so I went in there, and it was for Sharon Bialy and Sherry Thomas, and I hadn't read for them probably in 5 years, 6 years, for like the unit I remember reading for them for. Jeez. And I went in there, and the scene was basically a guy complaining about how the plumber put the sink in backwards. And so I went in there. There was no hellos. There was no how's it going. I went in and I was like, this fucking guy comes in and turns a fucking sink. And I was yelling the whole time, and I ended up throwing my script down. And then I finished, and I just kind of looked at them. And it was Russell. I just kind of looked at Russell, and he just kind of looked at me, and was like, okay, thanks. And I was like, yeah. And I walked out of the room, and I felt awesome. I was like, I left it all, like in basketball. You leave it all on the floor. You leave it all on the field. I was like, I left it all in the room. And I leave, and on the way home, I was like, I don't know. He may just think that I'm an angry person. I didn't even say hi or anything.
Oh, shit.
So I called my manager.
You literally just came right in and went into it.
Oh, yeah. Right into it. I was like, I got to make a... I'm taking a big swing.
Yeah.
And...
got to do that every now and then, right?
Yeah.
Got to mix it up.
Absolutely. And also, like, I was also mad. I was mad at myself. I was mad at my reps that they sent me in for the wrong role. I was mad that I wasn't auditioning. And then, like, a week goes by, and I was like... I called my manager. I was like, hey, can you just check in with them and let them know that, like, I'm not an angry person, that I, I was just, like, kind of trying to service the text. And she was like, yeah, I'll give them a call. And she called me back the next day, and she said they want you to read for the lead of the show. And I was like,
whoa.
Oh, okay. So they called me in to read for Dennis, which is Will Arnett's best friend. And
nerves.
Do
you come in screaming?
No, I can't.
I want this role, we're not the best friend.
Well, it worked the first time. Yeah. It's going to work this time. No, but when I went in for Dennis, I was so grateful because I thought that I had ruined another relationship with a casting director. Right. You know, I'd messed up my ankle a lot of times, so we actually had a real conversation. And it put me at ease, and then I did the audition, and about a week later, they called me back, and they were like, hey, they want you to have a chemistry with Will Arnett. And I'm like, whoa, like it's real now. I never had a chemistry with a star before.
Yeah,
it's been like, you know, with indie movies and stuff, but yeah, so I go in for the chemistry read, and Will stands up like right next to me, and he's like, all right, so what we're gonna do with this scene is you're gonna play out that window, and I'm just gonna come up here, and we're gonna have this scene here, and then I'm gonna go this way. And that's not like any other audition or read or anything, because usually you walk in the room, you do your thing, you leave. But he's standing up next to me. Mind you, I had done all my research. I had read all six of the scripts that they sent me. Mm-hmm. I had watched all of Arrested again because of Will. And
that's not a bad thing.
Oh, dude, I was just in awe of him. Like, he's tall. He's extremely handsome. He has an amazing voice, almost as good as Adam's. And he just like, I somehow said all the words.
Yeah.
And then after we did the first scene, you know, the whole room of producers, like seven people in the room, they're like, all right, cool, thanks a lot. And I was like, yeah, no, thank you. I had six scenes, but I guess they had seen enough after one. And I took a step towards the door and I stopped. And this was the first time that I ever done this. I stopped and I said, that felt weird. And I looked at everybody and I said, and if that felt weird for me, I'm sure that it looked weird for all of you guys. And they all just kind of looked at each other, and I was like getting no feedback. And I was like, would you guys mind if we did maybe this other scene? And I'm doing the scene with Will where I tell him to fuck off, and like we have this whole exchange and he's over there. Mm-hmm. I was secretly saying, Will, get behind the camera.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to be standing next to you.
Right.
And it was like the longest 4 seconds of my life. They just kind of sat there still and they just kind of looked at each other again. And I think it was Mark, one of the producers. He's like, yeah, why don't you go for it? He's like a British guy. I was terrible British. but yeah, then I did the second scene.
Wow.
And once he said go for it, I just like, I don't know. I felt like I had all this power.
Yeah, it's almost like you had their faith now.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And then I did the second scene, the third scene, the fourth and fifth scene. And then, yeah, I found out about a week later that I got the role.
Holy shit.
Yeah,
but what, like, a moment that kind of makes you realize, like, hey, sometimes, and we've all been there, we've all been in an audition where we were like, well, that didn't go well.
That sucked. Yeah.
That was not my best. Yeah. And to have the presence of mind to turn back and be like, you know what?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Let me do this again.
Well, I you know what I think it was? It was honestly, and I touched on this earlier, I think it was because that week in class, I kept saying to my students, I was like, guys, if it feels weird, it looks weird. Because people would get up and they'd do their scenes and like it looked weird as shit. Mm-hmm. And the reason it looked weird as shit is because nobody was listening to each other. Nobody was like being in service to anybody else in the scene. They were all just trying to do their own thing. And I must have said that maybe half a dozen times, like the week or two prior. I was like, if it feels weird, it looks weird.
Yeah.
And then
that was in your head then.
Yeah, it was. When I walked
Does that happen a lot when you coach, where you say things, giving advice, and then you go, oh, cool, I got to use that now.
Oh, for me. Oh, for sure. Like that's what I was saying. Like I find myself teaching and coaching things that I need to teach and learn myself. And that was, I didn't recognize that at the time because I'm like, I'm a good actor. It never feels weird for me. Like, I know what I'm doing. And it felt weird as shit. And I was like, they just popped into my head, and I was like, yeah, if it feels weird, it looks weird.
What was it about that other scene that was just gave you a clean slate?
The fact that they gave me instant approval. Like the 4 seconds of them all looking at each other like, oh, what the fuck is this guy doing? To like, yeah, why don't you do one of that other scene? Because it was a scene where I was like, why don't we do the scene where like I say fuck you and like Will, like I walk off and they're like, yeah, let's do that scene. And I was like, yes.
It's more fun, huh?
And
yeah.
And I mean, good for you because you knew you were there as a chemistry read, so it's like, they already like you.
Yeah.
They want you to succeed.
Yeah,
that's why they're having you in that room.
Yeah. Yeah. But there were five other people who were much more famous than me. And I knew that I was, I feel bad saying this, but I was chemistry reading against his best. I played the role of Dennis. Mm-hmm. His best friend is Dennis. And Dennis is an actor, and so
Dennis is going out for Dennis.
I was testing against Dennis, and his other best friend. His other best friend. It was an amalgamation of his two best friends, and his other best friend was reading for the role as well. So I was
wow.
like,
"Wow!
All right, well now I want to play role. Called Guess Who the Dennis Was."
Oh, yeah.
You don't have to answer.
Okay,
Dennis Franz.
No.
Dennis the Menace.
No.
Dennis Haskins, principal from Saved by the Bell.
No.
Dennis Leary.
You said I don't have to answer.
Yeah, you don't have to answer. Dennis. Yeah, I'll just add another. Just act like we're continuing the game. Dennis.
That's amazing.
Now I do just want to come up with another. Who's another Dennis, by the way?
Dennis. We said Franz.
Check. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
We did.
Know another Dennis?
I think we did the top Dennises in Hollywood.
Do you?
Rodman. Oh.
Dennis wow.
Rodman. Yeah, good one. Yeah,
good one. Definitely not it, but good one.
If he can negotiate peace with North Korea, that's he right. could probably get a role in the next
Norman
show.
Says Dennis Haysbert.
Dennis Haysbert. Oh, he's the State Farm, right? The guy from 24?
Serrano?
He was the president.
The black dude from Major
are you,
League.
Are you
the
in
president.
Good hands?
No, he was the president in 24.
Yeah, he was Serrano in Major League, though.
Exactly.
That's
same,
right.
He was?
Same part. Yeah,
same
Pedro
actor.
Serrano, remember?
Yeah. Of course I remember. I didn't know Joe that was
Boo's
the same guy.
Joe Boo, yeah.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Mind blown.
Wow.
Yeah, dude. And guess what?
Are you in
Michelle
good hands?
Tanner, played by two people on Full House. Those are twins.
Yes, I know.
Yeah.
I was like, wait a second.
At first, he thought you were saying like Stephanie Tanner. Like there was multiple twins.
Exactly.
And then and that show did.
So we did two seasons on Netflix and
Billboards.
Billboards. Yeah, we may hear about a third here pretty soon.
Okay. Yeah.
But, and while you guys are binge watching that, you can get more David also on Netflix.
That's right.
I just saw you in Girlfriend's Day.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, that was Bob Odenkirk. Yeah,
holy crap.
He wrote this movie, and it was funny. He said that he took this movie to Ted Sarandos like 12 years ago. Ted Sarandos is the head of Netflix. Yeah, and Ted was like, you know, I can't really do anything with it now, but in about 10 years, all movies are going to be streaming. And like when you hear the word streaming, you know, 12 years ago, I was like, what are you talking
about?
That's
stupid. Yeah, yeah.
And he was like,
that's like being like, dude, yogurt's going to be in a fucking squeeze packet in 12 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Fire this guy.
Get ready for it.
Get ready for it. Go-Gurt. It's happening. Yeah. Whether you like it or not.
Right. But he brought it back to Ted like 10 years later, and he was like, yeah, let's make this movie. So that was another Netflix movie.
Odenkirk.
Oh, he's the
I mean, he's a. He's on the Legend. Mount Rushmore of comedy.
Sure.
I mean,
sure.
Add a couple heads, but he's up there. Like,
dude, you guys would have a blast with him in here. Like, he is the most down to earth, but also the most playful guy. Like, if you get him going,
says yes to everything.
Oh, for sure. He's so available, and he's so compassionate, and he just wants to like get to know you. He made me feel so good. Like, I was only in the movie for like, I don't know, maybe four scenes. I was there for like a week and a half.
You play someone that may you may have based that person from Tyler, Texas.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, yep. I play like a former skinhead Nazi racist, former racist.
Yes.
And if you look closely, I actually have a swastika branded on my forehead in that movie.
Yep, I saw it.
Yeah, it was bad news.
Yeah,
were you holding a tiki torch?
No, but now
you're anti-racism.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So anti-racist. But yeah, he was amazing. He bought me a book. He put it in my little trailer. He like signed it, and he said how grateful he was to have me. And I'm like, he's doing that for me?
Yeah.
I'm only here for a week, and he's doing that for me.
To be fair, and this is what I want to transition to before we close out, like you, and I don't know where you got this and if you always were like this, but I feel like you were, where it's like you yes and work and you yes and experiences. You know what I'm saying? Like,
well, sure. That's why Dane Cook nicknamed you Downtown David.
What? Where did that come from? That's so funny.
That's from his Instagram post.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, we were playing like Mafia over there, and somehow I got that name. They go around. We went around the circle, and they were like, "Where are you from?" And I was like, "I'm Downtown Dave." And I was doing like a dumb thing, and it's because people were like, "Yeah, I'm Allie from Anchorage," and I was like, "Yeah, I'm Downtown Dave." and it stuck, and it's kind of annoying. It was kind of annoying because they would just be like, Downtown. I'm like, I don't want that.
Yeah,
yeah, not at all. But it's now anybody associated with that game is like, Downtown. I'm like, oh man, brought it upon myself.
Even DT would be more fun.
That's right. Yeah.
But like you, I think the first time we really got to hang, I mean, through basketball and like a lot of like at nights at like Brent and Rick's, but like when you hang, I mean, it's true with like Brad and I's friendship. Once he took me on the road with him, that's when we became buddies, because it's like you're out of your bubble.
Oh,
you're
for sure.
I mean, it's out of the state for sure, but even like just a few hours away from your familiarity.
Yeah, your comfort zone.
And
for
when Brent, when we were out there for the New York Comedy Festival, and I was opening for Dane at the Beacon, and Brent was doing trying to get his hour for Netflix, and you were just like, fuck it, I'm coming too, because that sounds like a blast.
Of course.
I'm going to come to all the cool shit.
Of course.
And dude, like, and then we end up doing a podcast recap, which if you haven't listened to, it's one of our top episodes, where we just basically recap that experience, because
in New York.
I mean, meeting Aaron Carter at 4 in the morning, you guys fucking biking around and going to Taylor Swift, the Knicks game with her after, but then like the fucking air guitar 80s band at the strip club, and then the shows, karaoke till 5 a.m. I mean, and I was so like, it added so much to that experience for me, because I was like, you know, I knew Brent and I were going to have a good time, because we like to, you know, similarly just go out and find find something to do. Like when you leave somewhere, it's like, oh, now let's go home. It's like, now what?
Right.
And you just took that up fucking tenfold, dude.
Oh, it was, I mean, New York does that to you. New York, like, and also like, you know, being a father and like, you know, being in LA and like trying to make sure that I'm making enough money to pay for this and make sure that my son's able to go to this. Like when I have the opportunity to like do something with like zero responsibility, like I don't have to get up tomorrow morning.
That's
like,
what downtown Dave.
Dude, I was in New York, a week in New York with like no commitments. It's like, let's do it.
Just comic buddies, but you're not performing?
Oh, man. Yeah, no pressure at all.
And you know what's great about that to me, too, is that like when I see like you doing like, there was one point when at the Comedy Central party, and we talked about this on the New York recap trip podcast, where we were dancing. Yeah. I think it was just like, it was a Comedy Central like New York Comedy Fest party.
It was.
And there was like, I think there was a stage where a band was going to perform. Yeah. And...
But the stage was only like a foot high.
Yeah.
It was like, so I was, I don't even know how I got up on the stage. No. Maybe I just needed more dancing room because like we got to dance.
Yep.
And I forgot.
I mean, we got to dance.
Yeah, exactly.
Dude. I thinking outside the box. Hashtag, we've been hanging.
Yeah. Hashtag David Sullivan. We got to dance.
That's right. We got to dance.
But it was like enough drinking and schmoozing to happen. And now it's like, all right, now how do we take this up a notch?
Exactly. There's music playing. Why is nobody dancing?
Now what, by the way, is like what I think is running through your head.
Oh, for sure.
And so you got on the stage.
Yeah.
And I was in a little circle of, I think, a couple people and talking, and we looked over and you kind of cheers me and then take it.
And then I was dancing, and then I was kind of, I don't know if I was going to come over and say hi to you or I was going to come over and say hi to Brent, but I just took a normal step, but I forget that the next level is a foot down. So I tumble and I have my glass of wine. It crashes on the floor.
You fell into the mic.
I fell into the mic and you hit a...
Oh, wait, no, you. That's right, because you fell down, but then you got up and grabbed the mic.
Yeah, I grabbed it, and I was like, oh, part of the show. Like, in a room full of comedians, I'm the only person who's not a comedian.
And by the way, now you're in a prep fall. God.
The whole stage and the area around the stage is empty, so it's like a glass break immediately draws attention, and then he grabs the mic, though, like this was like, you know, hello, toast time.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah, God, dude. it was embarrassing, but also, like,
you know what?
It was a great opportunity to just, like, I don't know. I guess just be. I had no other choice but to just pretend like, oh yeah, that's what it's supposed to
happen. That's creating your own fun. And by the way, I see moments like that, and it's like knowing your father. And I think there's certain people out here in life that judge people when they know that they are parents.
Yeah.
You know,
but
like when you know what they, how hard they crush that. Yeah. When I see you fall with the glass and break it into the fucking corner of a stage and draw not as many eyeballs as you should have, because a lot of people were just like, it's a crash at a party. Someone's going to break something.
Right.
Yeah. And I see you, there's some people that probably have the thought of like, he's a father. I see you do that and I go, he's a dad. That's a cool ass fucking dad.
Oh, dude,
you know what I'm saying?
That.
And you want to see like guys with kids still living it up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
True.
You want, because that gives that gives us without kids who want them hope. Like, okay.
Yeah.
You can still
have fun.
That's
a great point, right?
It's crazy.
He sees that in you, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's funny because like I grew up in like a strict like religious background and like Southern Baptist
in Tyler,
and
Texas.
Yeah.
That's
shocking. And so I was close to my dad, but like I didn't really feel like I knew my dad. Like,
oh, really?
I felt like he was hiding things, not hiding things, but just like not telling me everything.
Stoic
like I
figure,
wanted to know.
He wants to like be this.
Yeah,
maybe he's
he
not.
He wanted to be a good example,
right?
And so like I was like that early on in Kane's life, and then like I saw him just kind of like mimicking some of the things that I'm doing, and I'm like, I want him to like mimic who I am, not who I'm like pretending to be. And so yeah, I just live my life the way I want
to
do it.
Like, he's gonna listen to that podcast and this one at some point.
Yeah.
How old is he now?
12? He's 12. Yeah, he just turned 12 last week.
I mean, what age do you let him listen to podcasts?
Yeah, that's true. Probably now.
Well, he's already listening. Probably.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
He's probably already on the phone.
Yeah, he's got his phone.
He's gonna try his first pratfall into a stage next week.
But it is cool to see.
Do it solidly. Just,
yeah, that's so funny. Yeah, he definitely is like, Dad did it. I got
just like my dad.
Yeah.
It worked for him. Why is it not working for me?
But like, now he's working with Will Arnett. It'll work for me.
Yeah, when I met him at an undateable taping, I was like, oh, yeah, spitting image. And like, thanks, you're passing down everything you need to be passing down.
Oh, thank you, man. Yeah, man. Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, that's good kid.
Yeah, it's so great that you hear, like, A, I love hearing stories that, A, you had that, you had the movie that was so successful, but then you could have just gone by the wayside. Yeah. You could have just been like, well... Yeah. That was my thing. That was my touch with fame. I'm going to be telling this story in bars in Tyler, Texas or Massachusetts until I die.
For sure.
But you said no, and you kept at it. And now, like, I implore people, go watch Flaked, watch Girlfriend's Day, and... When the fuck is Sharp Objects going to come out?
Dude, that's going to come out next June.
June.
Yeah, it's going
to
be
not
HBO.
Yeah, it's going to be an HBO show. Amy Adams is in it, Academy Award winning actress. Mm-hmm. Amy Adams. And if Amy Adams is in it, you know she's going to be showing side boob because she does that in every single movie that
she's
does.
She's great at it.
Yep. Side boob extraordinaire. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much you can talk about it.
No,
but.
I mean, it's awesome. It's the same people that did Big Little Lies.
Oh, okay.
So it's the same.
So they got some heat on them right now.
Yeah, it's Jean-Marc Vallier. He directed Dallas Buyers Club. Directed five, six amazing movies, and then he did Dallas Buyers Club, and this was his next project. And yeah, they're gonna finish that up and get it out next June. And I play the bartender in the small town of Wind Gap, Missouri.
Slightly different accent, but okay, a little bit
different. I had dialect coach. You find out early on that Amy Adams is an alcoholic, so we become we rekindle our relationship that we had back in high school, because Wind Gap is like where she's from. She goes off to the big city and then she comes back, and then weird stuff starts happening.
Now, do you ask an Academy Award winning actress for any advice?
Yeah.
Do you learn anything from her?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, the first scene I had with her, I had to stop my chin from shaking because I was so nervous. Sure. What was it like working with Sandra Bullock? Legends. Like, you're just,
I mean,
like,
I think I've told this before, but it was like, you know, I had flashbacks. My first scene was holding guns at her and Melissa, and it's like, you know, I wanted to improvise because I wanted to show that I wasn't there just to fill space and I got this role for a reason. But also, you're like, dude, if my opening improv bombs.
Yes.
Do they replace me? Like, or do Melissa and Sandra give me looks of like,
why is he doing that?
So I'm getting in my head about like, just do the lines, whatever. Yeah, but then you're like, you got to trust yourself, man. And I felt a little more trusting of myself just, I think, because of experience at that point of like the amount of, and also you definitely have flashbacks to like, you know, Wolverine or the Superman days of those guys at the party being like, you'll never motorboat Sandra Bullock in a comedy, you piece of shit. You know, and
an oddly specific insult, but okay.
Wow, really? You saw Superman, thought that?
What foresight.
Yeah. But I mean, intimidated for sure. And then I got one laugh in, and then it was just like almost doing stand-up at a new stage where it was like, oh, I'm supposed to be here.
Yeah, this is what I do. Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure, and also I put a lot on them for being so... generous and inviting to, and I'm sure Amy was the same way, to talk to, where you're like, oh, cool, you're not making me feel like I'm overstepping boundaries or that I'm not supposed to be here.
Yeah, and like when you actually start talking to them like a normal person, you find out, oh, you're just another normal person.
Yeah.
You've just been doing this longer and like you're more successful, but like you're just a girl.
Yeah.
And
you're just a person.
That's
you have
exactly
eyes
right.
and a heart.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, she was talking about how she had failed pilots, and when she moved out here, she lived with a cousin's friend, and she got fired from a pilot. And I'm like, fuck, I'm talking to Amy Adams, and she's telling me that, you know, her first, you know, year out here was so tough. And I'm like, wow, you've gone through the same thing. And her boyfriend at the time, she's been with her husband now for like 12 years. They met in acting school.
Wow.
And they have a kid together. So it's like she just stayed in it, and she kept getting better and better. And that's kind of all. I mean, I'm old now. Like it's I moved out here when I was 28, and like I could, it's easy.
You're 31.
I'm 31. I'm not 32. But it's like this is what I'm gonna do for the rest of my life, I think and hope. So I don't know. I just keep doing it and hope that I get to keep doing it. I don't get in a rush anymore.
Well, but that and
it's a good mentality.
The fact that Amy Adams, Academy Award winning actress, is doing TV, just kind of shows you that now there's not, because there used to be that line like, okay, you're a movie star or you're a TV star.
Exactly. Which is it?
Yeah. And movie star is above.
Mm-hmm, for
now
sure.
It's just, it's all whatever, it's all whatever works.
It's the best story. It's people follow the best story.
Yeah. And the fact that now you can have career renaissances 2-3 maybe even 4 times where you go away for a while but then you come back you never know when a project's gonna hit.
That's right.
You never know when you're gonna be like, oh wow, now I'm a thing.
Of course. Jason Bateman,
I mean,
he's one of my favorites, and it's just like, where did he go for 20 years? What was he doing?
Yeah, I mean, that's a bonkers career. Yeah,
it's crazy. But now everything he touches is gold, and he's just so fun to watch, so easy to watch.
Yeah,
you guys watch Ozark?
Yeah, I mean, it was. I worked on it with you. Remember for the
No, I didn't know that's what it was.
Yeah, for
and that's why Adam didn't get the part. So that was David Sullivan, everybody.
No, man, let me finish. Fuck you. Yeah. I remember. What part
he
was
asked
it?
For too much money.
It was it was it was the role of the creepy undercover cop that ends up fucking the guy with the beard. Spoiler alert.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow.
So this guy looked like an older version. Remember the skinny kid in Road Trip who borrowed his parents'
DJ
car?
DJ Qualls.
Yeah, DJ Qualls.
He looked like an older version of that,
true.
Right?
They did.
And so, character actor-ish. I don't look like that.
Yeah.
But also, maybe my performance was bad. But I feel like what we found for that, I was much more smooth talky FBI undercover guy. Like I was a little more like Vince Vaughn-y for that was our take on it.
I like it when you, like, if you don't get a part, it's nice to when you see the project, you see the person who did get the part go, that's not me. And that's not what I was going for.
It
sucks when you don't get a part and then you see somebody like, they're doing what I did.
He looks exactly like me.
It's so funny.
So
buddy,
fuck you, Peter Dinklage. That's what I'm trying to say. Go fuck yourself. Yes. I could have done that. I could be hanging out with Daenerys.
Yeah.
Is that her name? I don't know. That sounds like a Ford for the Phoenix Suns.
It's so funny. I told a buddy of mine that story that I was, because he was obsessed with it. And I was like, yeah, I read for this part. And he goes, oh, shit. He goes, so you would have had to fuck that guy. And I go, it's TV. Film it. They probably do takes. He goes,
no,
you got to do a bunch of takes of fucking him? I go, dude, no. And again, he's a dad, so this is one of those moments where I go, you're a father, you know, with the downward slope.
You didn't fuck him.
It was an acting.
No.
But
that's what you do. You fuck them.
You fake fuck them for the. You do a fake. It's fake fucking.
So you fuck them in the audition.
Yeah.
No. All right, man. Can I be honest? This is why we don't talk as much anymore. Removed from the business. You know.
Yeah.
That's a show. I want to go around filming all of my friends who have kind of stuck with me from the beginning to now.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they saw me do one open mic, or they just saw me do stand-up for the first time, or they've seen the entire progression called Removed from the Business, and you interview them, and you get their take of what Hollywood is.
So it's like, oh, well, Adam does a podcast with a midget. He probably fucks the midget.
Well, I did tell you that one. We have that postcard of Brad and I. It's a E.T. Replica, where he's in the basket and I'm behind him on the bike.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in Kansas City, and there's this guy, a Trump supporter, right? And we got into it during the show, but I kept it kosher.
Yeah.
And I, at one point, was like, you know what, man? That was your choice. And like blah, 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 and this and that. And I was trying to equate like being a Trump supporter at this juncture.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, you know, I was trying to find an analogy for it. And I think it's like, to be a Trump supporter now, it's almost like if you took a shit on a roller coaster, you know, like, you know, you fucked up, but you don't necessarily have the nerve or the audacity to stand up and wipe that poopy shit up your pants, you know?
Yeah,
and everyone's looking around you being like, hey man, I think you shit your pants. And you're like, no, that was you, man. That was you. And you're like, you know what? And then you're like, no, dude, everyone can clearly see the poop. Maybe if you just stand up and clean the poop off, we can all have a laugh about this and get along.
Right.
And they go, oh, no, man, that was, you know what? Now I'm going to sit on this, I'm in my poopy pants on this roller coaster and ride it out till it dies. Uh-huh. And you're like, dude, you shit your pants, acknowledge it. And
Hillary,
like,
pooped in her emails.
Yeah, and that's, yeah, exactly. They go, Hillary's emails, and try to whatever. So this dude, we try to like get over it. And then I kind of squash it and move on to some bits. And I go outside, and the dude, I give him the postcard, and he goes outside, comes back in and goes, holds up and goes, you butt fucking a midget. And I go,
no.
I go, excuse me? He goes, you but fucking a midget. And I'm adding a little bit of a Casey twang here, but well, no, he just, I go, dude, that's E.T. He goes, no, man, you butt-fucking a midget. Wow. And I go, dude, E.T., have you seen the movie?
Right.
Guy in bike.
Iconic
kid,
scene.
E.T. in bike.
Right. It's in every Oscars montage ever.
Right. Definitely just taking that and recreating it for comedic effect for a podcast flyer. He goes, obviously. He goes, I don't care what you say, you butt-fucking his midget. And I go, dude, and this is why Trump won. You know what I'm saying? And this is why you and I are not seeing eye to eye, because you're looking at an E.T. recreation.
There's a bike in there.
Midget.
Yeah. Doesn't matter, man. You fucked around the bike basket.
He's in a basket.
Now, you cut a hole out like a popcorn thing in a movie theater.
He's surrounded by a blanket.
Doesn't matter, man. Cover up the dick.
You can't fool me.
You can't fool me. You're covering up the butt fuck.
Yeah.
Is that a song?
It's gotta be.
I hope so.
Anyway, Dave, you're the man.
Dude, this is fun.
Dude, you flew by. You're the best.
I did. Thank you guys.
And if you're ever in Los Angeles, please just hit up Downtown David on Instagram.
It's
hit
true,
him up
man.
On Twitter.
Yeah. Dude, there's a lot of people that are just like okay hangs, and you're a great hang all the time.
Oh, thanks, buddy. Yeah. David Sullivan, whatever, Twitter.
Yeah, give it all. Give it all.
That's it.
Yeah, he's on it, but it's Downtown David.
Yeah.
Wait, are you on Insta? What do you post? Yeah. What do you tweet? Anything worth?
Nothing. Yeah. I'm not. I'm
all
not
his
good.
Adventures in Downtown.
Social media, I just haven't gotten the hang of it still.
Well, you should write a book at some point called Downtown Dave. Because I'm sure, dude, the experiences I've had with you, I feel like are just scratching the surface of what you've... I mean, look, we talked about it on the podcast.
Yeah, I mean...
He's posted 47 pictures of Amy Adams' side boob already.
Go there. Everybody go there now. It's great. It's great.
Dave, you're the man.
Dave, I mean, thank you guys. I appreciate it. That's fun.
Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessime Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.